Word of mouth.
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 This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. A hearing held by the House Education and Workforce Committee last Thursday became a congressional grilling of NCAA and Division I school leaders over not sufficiently addressing grievances among student athletes. The hearing was triggered by the federal ruling that tentatively allowed scholarship football players at Northwestern University to unionize. The Boston Globe's Leon Nafok observed how differently a union of collegiate athletes would look from the blue-collar factory workers who've traditionally been the face of American labor. He found that among plummeting private sector union membership, a number of disparate groups are experimenting with worker advocacy and replacing unions as we know them. His article, Not Your Grandpa's Labor Union, appeared in the Boston Globe Ideas section. Leon, great to speak with you again.
Thanks for having me again.
So unlike the early industrial era when there was the likelihood of getting killed or maimed or working, 7 days a week spurred unionization, what is behind today's varied worker advocacy groups?
So basically there are more and more people who have jobs or who earn money, let's say, through non-traditional employment situations. They are part-time or they're independent contractors. The technical term is precarious or contingent workers, which means they don't have job security, they don't have contracts, they're misclassified as independent contractors or freelancers, even though they're doing the work of a permanent staff member. Basically, all these people can't really unionize in the way someone who is a permanent worker at a factory could back in the industrial era.
So there's a kind of vulnerability, but why isn't traditional unionization not an option for them?
So, okay, like if you look at for example, the fast food workers who have been trying to organize, they are employees of these franchises, right? So do those people work for that one restaurant or do they work for McDonald's Corporation?
Mm-hmm.
In order for them to organize in a meaningful way, you would have to go with the latter. But McDonald's so far has said, well, no, actually, you guys are employees of, this one restaurant. If you'd like to organize the 30 of you or whatever, fine. But that's not really effective. Another example is like fashion models,
mm-hmm.
Who face various kinds of, inhumane hours and sexual harassment in the fashion industry. To their rescue, recently has come the Model Alliance, and it's not a union. They can't give these models collective bargaining rights because they're all independent contractors. They're all essentially freelancers, and so by having this organization that's not a union, again, they can use their platform to put pressure on the industry, by writing op-eds, by filing lawsuits, by lobbying for laws to protect their members.
Well, I suppose fashion models could not be further from the old image of the Teamsters or something.
Exactly.
Back in the day.
Yeah.
The manufacturing sector is clearly no longer the model. But remind us, like, how much of a decline, how much of an anti-union moment are we in at this right now?
It's been plummeting and plummeting. At its peak, 35% of the private sector workforce was unionized, and that was back in the 50s. Last year, it was 6.6%.
Wow. Well, you gave us the example of the models, but there are also jazz musicians who are trying to unite for better working conditions from nightclub owners, graduate students, adjunct professors, and video music dancers. If you could, you can pick any of those, but what are some of their complaints and some of the tactics, non-traditional tactics, they're using to address them?
The music video dancers, again, like models, they're often classified as independent contractors. They felt powerless in terms of the working conditions that they were being forced to accept. To be specific, they would be asked to come in at 5 a.m. to be on set, even though they wouldn't actually be on the schedule to perform until much later. It was just easier for their employers to say, get there early. And leave late. There were issues involving knee damage, from being forced to dance for hours on concrete without any kind of protective gear. And so they started working with SAG-AFTRA, which is an established union. And so they are now unionized as part of that union. The way they got there, despite the obstacle that they faced, which was that they were, again, not technically employees of anyone, They made videos, designed to be viral, where they were trying to connect with other dancers around the country. They would hold meetings, not at the proverbial union hall, but at dance studios and nightclubs. And, you know, it worked. They got this multi-employer industry-wide contract, which now covers every music video that you see produced by any major record label.
Well, when you talk about video music dancers, graduate students, adjunct professors, you're talking mostly about young, educated populations, maybe more likely to be bold about their prospects or their ability to influence their workplaces collectively. How about those traditionally low-wage people who, you know, are working in restaurants or dishwashers or cooks or bartenders? How are they organizing?
Yeah, so for them, there's this New York-based organization called the Restaurant Opportunity Center. Like the Model Alliance, it's not a union. It is an organization that these people can join. They're one of their main tactics so far has been suing employers who, you know, do things like illegally withhold pay or provide dangerous working conditions for their employees. Because a lot of the problem for these folks is that they might work at one restaurant one week and then they'll work at a different one the following week. Mm-hmm. So in that scenario, like you can't unite with your fellow workers just because it's all so fractured.
Right.
To have the Restaurant Opportunity Center, which is one of the, I think, most established so-called worker centers that have sprung up over the last couple of decades, you know, as the Restaurant Opportunity Center, they can sue for back pay, for example.
Well, lawsuits then, rather than striking or collective bargaining. I'm wondering how traditional labor regards these fledgling groups.
Yeah, so I was really interested to find out that in the beginning, when these worker centers were first starting out, they were treated with great skepticism by traditional union organizers because they were seen as sort of diluting the labor movement because for all the potential good they can do, the people that join with them, they can't do the main thing that gave traditional unions power, which was collectively bargain. Hmm. And that tool is why unions, you know, made things happen. And without it, one could argue that there's not the same kind of leverage, you know. But with time, I think the skepticism has sort of melted away a little bit, if only because traditional union organizing has suffered so much.
Outside of the unions, though, there's a whole political realm. I mean, despite the downward slide of big labor, politicians still court the big organizations for votes.
Right.
If politicians can't court, you know, these disparate little pockets of alt labor, can those who are representing new ways of organizing really make any kind of difference in the political realm?
Yeah, well, I think some of them succeed at getting the attention of politicians. I mean, the Model Alliance, for example, they succeeded at getting a law passed in New York, which extended child labor protections to underage models. There's also the Domestic Workers Alliance, which lobbied for a law in New York that basically extended a bunch of different kinds of labor protections to nannies, caregivers, you know, people who, again, work for an individual family. Now, other states are looking at, you know, doing similar things. What's tricky still, you know, it's great that they got these laws are being passed, but a skeptic might say, well, it's still not capable of doing the thing that a labor union could do in the past because each nanny, each caregiver, each housekeeper, they work for someone different.
Right.
You know, even the ones who work for agencies, you know, how can you organize when the person on the other side of the table is not a person? It's, you know, it's a whole mess of different kinds of people.
Well, Neon Nafok, thank you for your time.
My pleasure.
Leon Nafok, staff writer for the Boston Globe Ideas section. You'll find a link to read his article, Not Your Grandpa's Labor Union, on our website, wordofmouthradio.org. Word of Mouth continues with the loving side of cavemen. Archaeological evidence reveals that Neanderthals were cooperative and caring, kind of awesome parents. Stay with us for that story after a short break.